Sorry. Hello. I will try to speak. I'm a little sick tonight. But I wanted to try to speak. let's see. I came back from Portugal with a what I thought was just a cold. I think it is just a cold, but it's gotten worse, so. Then the events of the past 48 hours have not necessarily made me feel better, so although that's not really true. It's not the events of the past 48 hours that have me sore throat and stuffy head. That's not it. So, yeah. How do we address elections and politicians and votes and campaign slogans and fear and hope. The sacredness of life, our shared humanity, you know, how do we address that all together? Which is what in our practice we are trying to do, anyway. And on Wednesday, so that was yesterday, when I was not quite as sick as I am today, there was someone was surprised or thought that I might not offer my online dokusans because of the election results. and I said, no, all the more reason to offer online dokusans. All the more reason to do what we do and to practice this, this honoring of our shared humanity, and not fall into the trap of fear and othering, as we say. And I, you know, various people who I've talked with, of course, my family and friends, Americans, because I actually don't know a single person who voted for Donald Trump, at least as far as I know. So everyone that I'm in contact with voted for Kamala Harris. So, and everyone I know voted. So there's not even anyone who I had to say, why didn't you vote or something? And I found in the conversation, you know, one of the common threads was always, oh, those people are so stupid. you know, they're so dumb. They're ignorant. Don't they see? How could they vote for him? You know, and it became really clear to me that as soon as I do that, I'm really missing what we share, and I'm missing how our suffering is one degree apart, you know, and our liberation is that also that close. And that by categorizing people who don't agree with me as stupid or dumb or ignorant, I am completely missing what this practice is about. I'm completely missing honoring our shared humanity. and the sacredness of life and the oneness of all beings. It doesn't mean that I agree with them or they agree with me, the people who didn't vote like me. But it doesn't mean that they are bad and I am good. And I read a Zen teacher today who said, this is one of the great rituals of American life. It's also a ritual in our countries in Europe, voting. So we have this ritual that we all share of going to vote. And that ritual is about making our voice heard, expressing something, leaving our mark or something like that. Participating in this great ritual that we all do together. And then, unfortunately, we can't really see what the results of that ritual are because we think it's about who won and lost. But it's actually more about the collective, of coming together and participating in this ritual together. And we lose sight of that when we focus only on someone wins and someone loses. And then we lose sight of, well, the very nature of the ritual is that we're asking everyone to share. It's like when we do this, the council circle, we're asking everyone to share in the ritual. So what happens too, though, is that when we focus only on winning and losing, then we also, the people who lose feel insecure and fearful, and the people who win feel righteous and certain. And yet, if we act from those positions, then we probably will do harm, if we act from a place of certainty, because, change, life is uncertain. So whatever the results of the election, it's uncertain what will happen, what the unfolding of the ritual will bring. We don't know, actually. We have deep fears, especially those of us who didn't vote for the candidate who won, and many people around the world who couldn't vote at all, in that couldn't participate in that ritual, have deep fears about what will happen, although it's uncertain. We don't really know. And then when we act from fear, then we, engage in hate and terror and rage, treating people as stupid because they didn't vote like me. And some of the voting that we do, sometimes we make our voting choices out of fear, which is a big part of why Trump won, was because he was preying on the fear of the voters who voted for him. And we see how damaging that is when we act out of fear. And this that the Zen teacher that I mentioned, who I read today, she's bl a black woman, and she told us, she said that a week ago, before the election, she had been driving, going to the doctor because she was sick, and she noticed a truck, what we call a pickup truck. I don't know how you call that in French, but it's probably the same thing, a pickup or something. I don't know. Adrien saying, yeah, it's a pickup. And there's a whole stereotype about who drives those things in America. Oh, so anyway, this pickup truck was it was a big silver pickup truck, and in the back, because people hang things in the back window, was a big flag, a blue flag with red stars, and in the middle was written, "Kamala sucks." And She was driving and she noticed this pickup truck, but she just kept driving. And then before she knew it, the truck had pulled up next to her and was honking at her and making faces at her. And then the driver started turning his truck towards her, trying to drive her off the road. And somehow she managed to not get off the road, or he didn't go to the extent of actually hitting her. And she actually said, and when she was telling the story, she said, "That must have really been the thrill of his day." Because she lives in New Mexico and there aren't a lot of black people in New Mexico. And that a woman driving alone in New Mexico was probably, he couldn't believe his luck that he, came upon a black woman driving alone. And that he thought he had, how did she phrased it something like, he thought he had scored in a game in which he was as invisible as me. So he's not feeling seen. And so he wants to make himself seen to someone else. And he's, thinking, oh, it's this, black woman. I want to make her feel unseen like I feel unseen, get rid of her. And she said something like he doesn't realize that he can't do away with me because she's coming from this place where we're all one, and that she's here with her ancestors who didn't have the right to vote, and he's with here with his ancestors, and who knows what their situations were, and they're here with all beings throughout space and time. And so this little action of trying to drive her off the road was really an act of desperation of him not seeing this oneness. And she didn't hold it against him. She didn't become angry and enraged because she could hold his pain and his unease. She recognized what was driving him to do this. Was driving her off the road. Because she knows herself when she tries to eliminate people, not see them, not recognize them or acknowledge them. Do we want to drive all these people off the road who didn't vote like us? I'm speaking for all of the people like me who voted. Of course, there's two people on the screen who voted, I think, Debbie and Lisa. So are we going to drive everyone off the road who didn't vote like us? And are all the people who didn't vote like us going to drive us off the road? See, this is the problem. We all fear. That and both sides, as it were, fear that we won't be able to live as we are. So one side wants to live a certain way, and the other side wants to live a certain way and wants to protect people who are being discriminated against. The other side wants the same thing, but it just so happens that it's different protections, it's different ways of expressing themselves that they want protected. And can we acknowledge that and see that change is constant? This is what I keep saying to people too, is that at my age, I've gone through a number of these presidential elections, and I know the emotions that I feel each time with the result. And I learned after several of them that, sometimes we say what goes around comes around, but meaning that it's impermanent, change happens. The problem is that we do a lot of damage in the meantime. As the change is happening, we don't acknowledge it and we do a lot of damage. So if we think things are permanent or what we are doing is right and what others are doing is wrong, We do a lot of harm. So what do we do then? I don't know. What do we do? That's why I said, well, what am I going, what else am I going to do? Of course I'm going to do my doksans. Of course I'm going to come here and sit and try to talk. Unfortunately, I've had to cancel my trip to go to Adelien's place for the day of practice because I just don't feel that I can do it. So I could come here and sit and do this, but I don't think I can take the train tomorrow and do all that. So, but that doesn't mean that I don't honor the practice and that I will try to do a Dharma talk by Zoom for the people. And I'm happy that Adelien will maintain it, whether I'm there or not. So can we, despite all of our differences and whatever is happening for us, so in, whether I'm feeling sick or not, whatever, can I try to dismantle my perceptions of others and not be caught by they're stupid, they're dumb, they're uneducated, they're blind. All these things we say if they don't agree with what we agree with. Because when you really listen, I've listened to a lot of what people are saying. Actually, a lot of people voted for Trump out of a place of insecurity and economic desperation and fear, a lot of fear. And then, of course, even the people didn't vote for Kamala Harris because she's a woman of color. And so there's a fear of the other, or there's a fixed idea about what a woman is, and there's a fixed idea about people of color. And even someone said, oh yes, well, in a survey, they said, oh well, but Trump whatever things he's done, a convicted felon, misogynist, a bully, abuser of women, whatever, all these things. A lot of people, they said, that doesn't really matter. For me, he seems like he's stronger and more able to hold a place in the world, keep America's place in the world, something like that. Which is astounding that that's all they care about. And but that too is coming from a place of fear and identification, right? Now, those people would never say that about a woman, I'm sure. No matter how strong and how smart she was, she wouldn't convey that strength to those people, I'm sure. And those are fixed ideas, and if we act from those places of fixed perceptions, well, then we have trouble. And we just perpetuate the fear because the one who's preying on our fear to get elected will continue preying on our fear. And it just tends to make things worse if we act from fear, let's say, something like that. So, what do we do? Someone else said, the best thing we can do is to get to know our neighbors, whoever they are. Be able to say hello to them in the morning and be able to, and if we do that, if we all do that, then we will, it will be a different place, and we will rely on one another to protect each other, to protect our communities, to protect people that don't have protection, to acknowledge who they are and where they come from and what they believe, even if it's not what I believe. But just, okay, I see, I hear, It's like we do in the circle, in the talking circle. We're not judging what people are saying. We just, okay, that's what they say. And we thank them for saying it, sharing it. This does not mean, however, that we don't need to act. But can we act from a place of seeing one another instead of acting from a place of not seeing each other? So this guy, when he doesn't truly see the woman, the guy in the truck, when he doesn't truly see her, he tries to drive her off the road. And when she sees him, she doesn't react. Of course, she stays on the road. Of course, she reacts to, but she doesn't feed the anger and the rage and the aggression. She just goes on about her business and drives on. Because she values life, she honors the sacredness of it, and she can see the pain and the suffering that is emanating from this man, because otherwise he wouldn't do that. If you're not pained and distressed, you would not try to drive someone off the road and ride around with a sign that says Kamala sucks, It doesn't mean that we don't sometimes catch ourselves. Like I said, when I was in the United States, I took my mother to vote because we can, in the US, you can vote early. And so I took her to her voting place, and there was a long line of people. And I think it's like 100 meters before the line, before the entry. People are allowed to have signs and advertise for the candidates and things. So I was walking with my mother past those people. It did cross my mind, although I caught myself, of walking up to those people who were with their Trump sign and saying, "Really? Don't you see? Are you really promoting a convicted felon, a rapist?" Everything that I could think of. And I thought, no, why would I do that? Why would I go to those people and say that? Except I would, the only reason I would do that is would be acting from a place of trying to, as we say, get in their face, engage in some kind of fight, which did not have its place. There were also people with Harris signs and for the local candidates and things like that. So I just walked on. And it did occur to me that half the people in that line, proportionally, statistically, half the people in that line were voting for Trump. And I was looking at them, and at first I was like mystified, thinking these people look so normal. They live in my mother's neighborhood, and they, of course, there was no one of color. Oddly enough, all of the poll workers were the people who were there receiving you and greeting and showing you what to do and everything. They were all black. But all the people waiting in line were white in my mother's neighborhood. And I did have to, again, I caught myself thinking, wow. I have a really fixed idea about who a Trump voter is. Probably and proportionally in that line, half of them were not voting for Trump, because I think in my mother's neighborhood, it's not really Trump country, but some were, I'm sure. And it was impossible to see which ones did. It's a secret ballot, right? Everyone goes in there and votes their conscience. So, we do have these things. This does arise. So, and when it does, I try to say to myself, okay, you're judging. You have a really dualistic view about this. Take a step back. Do you see what you're doing when you say these people are stupid? And I've said that to people, you know. I've been having this ongoing conversation with my husband for 48 hours, and he just keeps saying, "Oh, those people are so stupid," you know. And I keep saying, "Well, wait, if you say that, do you see what you're doing?" You know. So, can we keep faith in the basic goodness of all beings and the impermanence and the sacredness of all of life and breathe, you know, it helps. Because we don't know. We don't know. For better or worse, as we say. And, you know, so like I didn't want the election to turn out like it did. I can't say I didn't expect it. I kind of expected it, but I didn't expect to have my cold transform into this something like ugh, kind of chested thing and not feeling good. I fully expected to be going to the Dôme tomorrow. I even bought a bottle of wine to give to the people who were going to house me. I'll give it to them the next time I come. Adayan, I talked about, you know, everything we were going to do, but you know, things change. Uncertainty. Change is certain. And our practice is to, you know, how do we receive what arises? Because that's our freedom, actually. Our freedom is to respond to what is right at our feet here and now. And that's what do we create in that moment? You know, it's like making a soup. We use this analogy of, you know, using whatever, making the supreme meal. This is Bernie Glassman's term, and using whatever ingredients are here. Well, right now, these ingredients are this. So what do we do with it? How do we make the supreme meal with this? With deception and fear and uncertainty. Sickness, change. What do we do with that? That's where our freedom lies. When we don't see that and we don't work there, when we try to make it otherwise, then we're constrained and we limit ourselves. So, and if we can see that freedom we have to respond to the situation, then that changes how we, you know, how we feel about the situation. Instead of feeling trapped and strangled, because it's actually our ideas and our fixed positions that strangle us, we can really liberate ourselves from that and just respond to this, whatever it is. It doesn't mean like it doesn't mean we give up. It's not a, you know, it's not a capitulation. I mean, it is a capitulation of the self that is attached to these ideas, but it's not a capitulation in the what is our intention in this in our practice, you know? So it's to wake up to things as they are, to see the wholeness of life. And so that does not, we don't give that up. It doesn't mean we don't work for in going in that direction of wholeness and goodness and caring. compassion. That doesn't mean we give up to give that up. But if we become caught in there, those people are stupid. The people I know are smart. Then we're not honoring the wholeness. We're not honoring the value of all of life. And we're not cultivating compassion and wisdom. So maybe I'll stop there and hear if anyone has anything to share. I'm sure everybody has a lot of feelings about this situation, even if you're not American. I mean, everybody seems to be affected by it everywhere. So, or if you want to talk, ask something else. Share something else. Adaya.
Hi everyone. Lot of things, yeah. First of all, it seems to me that since the beginning of this talk, you're much better. So, Amy, I think you should consider, and also a swim in the river here is probably what's best for you right now in terms of that is my prescription. So, I think you should come. Yeah, I had two things came to mind. I was thinking the first thing that came to mind when you started the Dharma talk, and usually what I think is let's see if I still have it in mind later, and if I do, maybe it makes some sort of sense. So in this case, it was the idea of indoctrination. And so what comes, I mean, what came to mind was, the issue, I mean, if it is an issue, I don't know, are we all indoctrinated? Because to a degree it seems that we are, even when we think we're freer or more aware or something, we definitely have some forms of biases or so, but what about this guy in this pickup? I understand, he's coming from a place of fear, like, I don't know. I'm also hearing that Trump has a lot of evangelical support, and these people are known to be actively indoctrinating people. So what do we do with that? And of course, my feeling is that our practice here is the opposite. But I mean, I don't want to make opposites, but in the sense that this is our practice has to do with liberating ourselves, which is in a way the opposite, exact opposite of indoctrination. And I mean, we could even maybe put in the same or in a similar category indoctrination and, sort of mental and physical slavery or something, or maybe they are. And I do believe that some people get really put in these places, I mean, through education and but even later in life. So yeah, I guess that's maybe enough of a question or so. Any thoughts about that, or yeah, what do you think? Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. It's true, and in the word indoctrination, there's doctrine, and it just so happens that our practice there's no doctrine, in Buddhism or in Zen, it's not a doctrine. And so if we find ourselves becoming indoctrinated in this practice, then we should maybe look at what the practice is and who is guiding it, because if someone's trying to indoctrinate you in your practice, and like you point out, it's the opposite, as it were. Because the indoctrination limits your freedom, absolutely, yeah. And so indoctrination, people, that's what I said, people become susceptible to indoctrination or cult personalities like Trump's when they are fearful. And fear is kind of, a huge, it's like a bucket into which we can put all kinds of things. But fear because there's, their situations are, they don't feel seen, they don't feel, they don't, they're suffering from, job loss, economic distress, communities ravaged by, fentanyl and other pharmaceuticals, and feeling threatened by other, so migrants, right? And so then out of that fear, then they fall prey to those who seek to indoctrinate. And it sounds like that's the end, they have the answer. Whereas I don't think anyone, at least I try not to promote our practice as being one of I have the answer. Apart from, saying you have the answer. So my answer is, well, you have the answer. It's not I have the answer. So yes, I mean, it is, it's a really toxic thing. The fear and the vulnerability that people feel and the distress. And, one of the things that seemed really clear to me, and this also happened when Trump was elected the first time, is that all these famous people, big stars of all kinds, came out and supported Kamala Harris. All the big music stars and the Hollywood people and all of this. Well, that doesn't really make people who don't feel good about themselves feel like they want to vote for that candidate, because they don't feel like they're like those people. They don't, they feel unseen. They don't have what those people have. They don't look like those people. They don't have the easy life and the, whatever the fame and the fortune that those people have. And it doesn't really speak to them. So someone who's telling them that, yes, I hear your fears, and they're even worse than you think, it's even worse than you think, and I'm going to fix it all. Well, that they these people can relate to that, because then it makes them feel good. It makes them feel like, oh, I'm being seen and I'm being heard. I'm not having famous people up here telling me how great this candidate is. I have somebody who's saying, oh yeah, all these people are bad and we have to get rid of them and they're criminals. And it sounds like a paradox, but we can understand that. Somebody feels our pain, you go to a psychotherapist and they you tell them, how you're suffering and everything. It feels good when they look at you and say, and they see you and they hear you and they let you talk. Somebody's seeing your pain. It's really poignant in a sense, this vote, actually. A tragic poignancy or something. Because the tragedy is how much harm will be done and all the people who are suffering. I have a niece who is trans, a niece, a nephew, whatever you want to say. They, we would say. And I'm really worried about them, because this is a new world. If they're going to start discriminating against trans people, wow. And I was thinking of even telling them they should come and like enroll in the Sorbonne or something and live with me, for a while and just let things pass. I don't know. So it's those kinds of things that are worrisome. Who will be harmed by this, The harm that will be done from this acting from fear and othering, Debbie.
Well, this is, of course, the subject of the day. Thank you, Amy Roshi. I don't want to announce that I'm on Adam's team. And the word stupid is not the same to me as ignorant. But I am an educator, and I've been very worried for several years about the level of political information and sophistication of the American people. And you are scared when you don't know. But I heard the Daily Show sent, oh, it was a woman. I don't know who it was. As a matter of fact, you didn't see her, and she was interviewing. I can barely tell this without going crazy. It's just so weird. She was interviewing MAGA people and asking them if they knew some basic things. They say, have I told you all this before? I feel like I've already said this. I've told so many people, I couldn't believe it. She said, yes, everybody says that Kamala Harris is a Marxist. And do you think that? Yes, we think that. Well, why don't you explain to the others what a Marxist is? Well, from what I understood, a Marxist is somebody that gets humiliated because they have a mark on them or something like that. Was not a child. It was like a 6-year-old woman. You know, it's just, come on, y'all, you cannot vote in that state of ignorance. And but I've felt that for years and years and years, that there is a slant in the system that keeps pe people from finding out what's going on. And then, of course, being scared is quite logical. That you don't have the reins to be able to make an adult personal choice because you don't really know what's going on. So to me, it's not the same thing to say that people are ignorant, or they are ignorant, as to say, and I'm tempted. As a matter of fact, I wrote it to somebody, some message. How can they be so stupid? But just stupid is an insult. Ignorant is a constat. I mean, there's a problem. After that, it reminds me very much of things that we used to discuss at school. What do you do with the veil business? If you say to a young woman, I can't stand the fact that you have that on your head, it's over. The contact is dead. If you want to make something happen or be part of something that might change in their life, have to go slow, I guess. I don't, as you were saying, Amy, I don't have any Trump people in my family. Well, my sister-in-law won't tell. And as far as I'm concerned, not telling means that you're hiding something. But she just doesn't want to talk about politics because it makes people mad. But I don't know anybody that voted Trump or that wanted to. So I really don't. If I fell upon a bunch, I probably wouldn't make it. I probably would have to leave because I know I'm not open enough to just say, oh, well, everybody's got a different opinion. I'd like to be. And at the same time, as I say, I feel that it's important also to defend my idea of what is moral, what is a good citizen, what is not necessarily what's a good American. I'm not much of a patriot, but what's a good adult citizen? And if it's different from somebody else's, well, that's the thing, change the channel, you know. But then it's important for me to defend what I believe, without necessarily saying you're stupid because you don't think the same thing as me. I'll just think that. I won't say it.
Yeah, like you say, you know, if you approach the girl in the school about the headscarf and saying, you know, I can't stand it or whatever it is, it's very different than if you engage and, you know, treat them as a real live person who and honor their difference and, you know, have a discussion. It's very different. And the same thing with, you know, reaching in American politics, they call that reaching across the aisle because there's like an aisle that divides the left from the right. And it used to be that politicians were able to reach across the aisle. and negotiate and talk to each other and recognize one another. Well, that doesn't exist anymore. It's become so polarized. And so therefore, we then cause a lot of harm.
It sounds a lot like, ignorance is something, a term that we use a lot in our Zen jargon. It's one of the three poisons, and with anger and fear. So it's like, it's not even, I mean, saying it's not the same as saying dumb. It's just saying not seeing, as you were saying, it's not seeing that what the oneness and just seeing everything that separates us from the other. That's where the suffering comes from, and it's big time. I don't know any Trump people either. Something that sort of, I don't know if it makes me feel better, but I have to check, but in the news, I heard that actually Trump had won with the same amount of vote that he had done in 2016 than in 2020 when he lost. He didn't get more votes. It's just that there are less voters. And so the number of people who support him apparently are still the same number of people, unfortunately. I mean, somehow it's reassuring. The number hasn't grown. It's just that people haven't didn't go voting enough. Anyway, that's on the sideline.
It's true. So when we use this word ignorance in the context of like what you and Debbie are saying, where it's just it's a constat, it's like, okay, it means we're not seeing something or we're not aware of something. That's when we use it in our terminology. But it can also be used in a pejorative way where we say that person is so ignorant. And that's what I mean when we say that about those people. They're ignorant. They could say the same thing about us if we're talking about them and us, well, they're ignorant because they don't see that Christ is the savior, or God sent Trump to be the president of the United States and save the corrupt America, or that we're all being invaded by hordes of criminals from Latin America, or our children are going to be sent to school and come home in the afternoon with, after a trans operation. They can tell us these things that they are saying we don't see, that we're ignorant. So depends how we use it, and it's very telling that, of course, none of us know any Trump voters because that's how polarized it's become. I'm sure there are crowds of people who are Trump voters who don't know anybody who voted for Harris, It's so polarized. It's like we don't even read the same news, or we don't circulate in the same places. I suspect that at least one or two of my cousins voted for Trump, actually. I think. I know they did in 2016, but I don't know if they did now.
Would they tell you, or is it nobody's talking?
Don't know. Depends what the context was, I think. I'm not sure. Sansi, yeah, you want to say something?
Is it a, I wanted to ask a question, if that's okay. because you spoke about the sacredness of life, and then I wanted to ask why is it seems like a crazy question, but why is it so sacred? Is it because, I mean, feel it in me, like the attachment to not wanting to die and things. That is it because it manifests in all these unlimited, unique forms, like all these different tiles and in Trump and in all the different forms? And is it because it's also so ephemeral, or is it because, like, why is it sacred, I guess, is my question.
Yeah. Well, much of what you said, yes, I would say yes. And included in that is also death is sacred. So it's not only life that is sacred. Everything that is sacred. because as soon because it's all one. And when, you know, we talked about this during the retreat too, you know, because we started the retreat on the Day of the Dead, and talked about how the separation between life and death is being celebrated or honored on that day, you know, that and in this season where the veil is thinning between night and day and the darkness is growing and light is fading. And so it's like you say, Sansi, that everything is a manifestation of this of life. Even death is a manifestation of that. So it's in that sense that it's sacred, that if we kill one thing, we kill other, we still kill everything. And if we honor one thing but not something else, then we're killing, you know, we're not acknowledging the oneness. So can we honor what doesn't look like me or what I don't like? Or can I honor my sickness? And, you know, Adrien says I seem better. Well, in a sense, I am, but it's kind of an illusion, I think. It's because I'm running on adrenaline and sharing with you gives me great adrenaline, you know. Gives me it's kind of a odd thing, but the life force, you know, blooms when we share together. So that's why we say it's sacred. You basically said it. So, Marlene.
Good evening, everyone. I was already thinking about it, but now you mentioned the sacredness of things also that bloom and how life is have moments that are blooming and moments of decay, and it's a cycle too. And I remember two or three days ago, I read this, I think he's Japanese gardener, that's he was talking about his relationship with his garden and the species that are there, and what he realizes from this relationship, from being a gardener. And he said, the gardener, it's like in music tempo mode, I translate mode, is waiting, it's waiting. And he realizes it because he was looking to a shrub and he thought, this shrub is not very well. I hope I'll find you better next year. And when it just I understood what I understood, it somehow how paradoxal this can be, because when this waiting mode is the gardener mo mode, it's also our, it's always, we are not waiting, but because we are seeing what is in front of us, and probably the shrub was weak or something like this, or was not very well. And I hope I'll see you next year. And in this political question, I'm not American. I really don't know what it is to live in America, but must be hard times for great part of population. It's millions. I think it's 49 millions that are immigrants nowadays there. I think I heard it. So it's kind of not, they are not waiting. They vote today because they feel probably what we said, afraid and not recognized and not seen. And they vote in this man that just says, I have the answer for you. It's this, and I know it. I am going to make you. It's us that are going to put American in track now. So it's kind of next year. Maybe this everyone, some of those voters in Trump would see how weak they were today. And maybe they could be better if somehow, we don't know, things change. And basically, I think when it happens, I think no, it's like today, yesterday, it was big shit. But maybe after that, it's the other opposite passion for some of the people. And I hope so. I hope so, because everybody needs to be well and safe in a safe place. Yeah. We don't see it going in that way, but even so, for some of them, maybe they are not, will not be so ignorant next year or in 4 years. I hope so. Thank you.
Yeah, can we keep the faith in our fellow humans, and in the basic goodness of all, of everyone, of each of us, and trust that trust, yeah, trust. That we will be able to, live in a world in which everyone is taken care of and the planet is respected and life is honored. Of course, like John Lennon said, you may say that I'm a dreamer, but just imagine it, imagine it. So, I guess we should stop there. I managed to talk all this time, an hour. You helped. You all helped. So, thank you.